Hello, welcome to Bare Naked Politics. This is the podcast for people who want to keep up with the headlines, who want to understand what's going on in the news, but who aren't necessarily politics experts. If you want it to make sense, and if you want someone to talk you through it in a language that actual people speak, this is probably a good idea of a podcast to listen to. I'm Julia Bell, and I'm here to tell you what's going on, which, by the way, quite a big deal. We've got a new Prime Minister. That's happened since I last uploaded. I know it's been a while, but it's been summer. And I, along with lots of you, I'm getting the impression, kind of just wanted to take my foot off the pedal for a bit and chill and not, you know, live and breathe the news. So if you've missed me, don't worry, I'm back. And so are the girls that produce it with me, Maddie and Hannah. They've been all hands on deck this week. So we're back. Boris Johnson's gone. Liz Truss is in. That's the current situation. Yes, she beat Rishi Sunak in the Conservative leadership race. We know that now. The results came out on Monday, the 5th of September. I'm recording this on the evening of Tuesday, the 6th of September, which is the day that it has been made official. Liz Truss is our PM now. So I'm going to talk you through it. I'm going to talk you through what you might have missed in the run-up to this and what were Truss's first official public words as our Prime Minister? What's she going to focus on? What does she care about? Or what does she at least project to? We'll talk about how much of a margin she won by, how much of the population actually voted for her, because of course it wasn't an open public vote, it was just within the Conservative membership. Let's talk about who's furious about it and who's happy with it. And I'm just going to give you it all. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to the podcast or you've clicked follow if you're listening on Spotify. And make sure, by the way, that you're following the Instagram account at Bare Naked Politics. There's polls on there. There's clips of, you know, the big things that are happening, episode trailers, key breakdowns to explain what's going on and blah, blah. OK, with that said, let's get into it. Liz Truss is our Prime Minister. What the hell are we in for? Let's see. OK, so we're now on to our fourth Conservative Prime Minister in a row since Gordon Brown. You know, we had David Cameron, then we had Theresa May, then Boris Johnson, and here we are at number four, Liz Truss. That's quite a few in a row. She is also our third ever female Prime Minister. Of course, we had Margaret Thatcher first off, Theresa May, and then her. All three of them have been Conservatives, incidentally. And she's had a whole summer of hustings and campaigning. Like I say, her main opponent was Rishi Sunak in those last 8 weeks or so. And when polls closed on Friday the 2nd of September, she snagged that top job by about 21,000 votes. I don't know anyone who's massively surprised. She'd been leading the polls for quite some time. She was a clear favourite within the Conservative Party membership. To quickly look at some figures, Truss won the leadership contest, like I say, by about 21,000 votes. So she got 57% of that vote. Sunak got 43%. It seems like actually a fair chunk. But to be fair, when you look at it compared to past Tory leadership elections, it's lower than her predecessors. Johnson won against Jeremy Hunt by 66% of the vote he got. David Cameron got 68%. So of the already small chunk of people that could vote, not all of them did. And then between that, there was 21,000 votes difference or so. So not a groundbreaking triumph, but a triumph all the same. And the margin between her and Rishi Sunak was, you know, there was something to it. It wasn't by the skin of her teeth. And before I kind of launch into a breakdown of what we can expect from Liz Truss and what she's hinted that her priorities will be, let's just tie up the loose end that is Boris Johnson and his era. So as you remember, in July 2022, early July, Boris Johnson resigned as the leader of the Conservative Party, but not as the PM. He resigned as the leader of the Conservative Party because of this colossal tsunami of resignations from members of his own government, totaling over 50. This was a mess for him, and it was kind of it got to a point where it was unavoidable. I'm sure you remember the feeling there, that it was like, oh my God, this wave of condemnation amongst his own team basically is too much for any Prime Minister to get over. He's gonna have to go. And so he did. And then that kickstarted the Conservative leadership race to replace him. And the reason I'm saying that he stepped down as Conservative Party leader but not as a Prime Minister is because he said, look, I need to stay on as the Prime Minister to be a quote unquote caretaker. So he stayed on to, like, see us through. And some people were saying, why can't we just speed up this leadership contest and get someone in quicker? But that was the way that it happened. And, you know, Johnson referred to the fact that this is custom. This is what people do. People resign, but then they stay on for a bit just to kind of ease the transition. And then on the morning of Tuesday, the 6th of September, the day I'm recording, Johnson went to Balmoral Castle to officially resign as PM. Why did he go there? That's where the Queen is at the moment, at least at the time I'm recording this. And the Queen is needed in this process. She has to dissolve his government so that she can speak to the incoming PM, in this case, Liz Truss, and then, you know, they can form a government from there. Usually this process is done at Buckingham Palace, I will say. But due to this quote-unquote episodic mobility issue that the Queen is having, she stayed in Scotland and kind of made Truss and Johnson come to her. So the whole process that would be done at Buckingham Palace was done at Balmoral. I know that this thing about the Queen and her role in forming new governments, it always niggles you guys. Whenever I talk about her involvement, it kind of pricks your ears. Like, why is she involved? This is meant to be a democracy. Why do we kind of rely on a monarch to green light it? But at this point, it's important to remember that it's just a ceremonial thing, in the same sense that she ratifies any law that's passed. You can't actually turn it into a law until she gives it her stamp. So it's kind of the same thing. The monarch stays neutral on political matters, at least publicly. She doesn't even vote, but this is a part of the process. Is it weird? Sure. But is the UK weird? Abso-fucking-lutely. Anyway, before Johnson's departure from Number 10 this morning, he gave this kind of final farewell speech when he was about to go to Balmoral. He stood in front of the Number 10 Downing Street door and said his goodbyes before heading up to Scotland. And that speech, it wasn't... I mean, it was a typical goodbye speech in the sense that he reeled off all of his accomplishments and so on. But it wasn't completely void of little digs. For instance, he said that this leadership has unexpectedly turned into a relay race, in the sense that, like, oh, I didn't know I was having to hand on the baton to someone else right now. This really did come about in a bit of an unexpected way. So that's a bit of a dig at how he got booted out all of a sudden, kind of thing. But he did display support for Liz Truss in saying, look, we've got to get behind her in these hard times. And no one's that surprised by that, because she was really loyal to him throughout his whole kind of scandal. Scandals, plural, I should say. Here's a clip, by the way, from Boris Johnson's goodbye speech. And this is a particularly Johnson-y bit.
Let me say that I am now like one of those booster rockets that has fulfilled its function, and I will now be gently re-entering the atmosphere and splashing down invisibly in some remote and obscure corner of the Pacific. And like Cincinnatus, I am returning to my plough, and I will be offering this government nothing but the most fervent support.
There you go. Boris Johnson, are now ex-Prime Minister, outside Downing Street on the morning of Tuesday, the 6th of September. So Johnson then visited Balmoral to see the Queen and to resign so that she could dissolve his government. And then Liz Truss, as per convention, requested that the Queen allow her to form a government, which, of course, she did. Okay, let's dig into what life under Liz Truss should look like. Today, on Tuesday, the 6th of September, of course, in her first speech as Prime Minister, she outlined three main priorities. Have a listen.
As Prime Minister, I will pursue three early priorities. Firstly, I will get Britain working again. I have a bold plan to grow the economy through tax cuts and reform. I will cut taxes to reward hard work and boost business-led growth and investment. We'll get spades in the ground to make sure people are not facing unaffordable energy bills. And we will also make sure that we are building hospitals, schools, roads and broadband. Secondly, I will deal hands-on with the energy crisis caused by Putin's war. I will take action this week to deal with energy bills and to secure our future energy supply. Thirdly, I will make sure that people can get doctor's appointments and the NHS services they need. We will put our health service on a firm footing. by delivering on the economy, on energy and on the NHS, we will put our nation on the path to long-term success.
So there you go, lowering taxes, the most, you know, traditionally conservative thing you could ever say. Lowering taxes is like the cornerstone of what a lot of conservatives base their identity on, politically, frankly. So lowering taxes, sorting out the energy crisis. If she hadn't mentioned that, it would have been weird, because that is absolutely top of mind for everybody. If you're listening to this and you're living in the UK, I would be shocked and frankly jealous if you're not worrying, or at least heavily considering, your energy bills at this time. And it's not just exclusive to the UK. I know that rolls out across the world, but in each country it's slightly differing. So it'd be weird if she didn't mention that. And then the third thing, fixing the NHS. So she talked quite heavily about the NHS. Those were the three things. So if you're thinking, okay, that all sounds actually quite nice, lower my taxes, sort out my energy bills, and help the NHS, I like those three things. Maybe you're also thinking, I don't believe everything I hear these days in politics. I'm slightly cynical now, which is totally understandable. So let's break them down a little bit. Bear in mind, I'm not going off much information. It's just things that she's hinted at or said, or things we've gathered here. But on the NHS, first off, again, nondescript in the details, but she backed shifting a greater proportion of healthcare spending towards social care. You know how social care has been this like big elephant in the room, really ever since, like, well, particularly around Matt Hancock's time as health secretary and then on through to Sajid Javid. So that is something that she addressed and said that she wants to focus on. Let's see what happens there. On tax, her and Rishi Sunak clashed the most on this, because of course Rishi Sunak had been the chancellor. He had been the man in charge of the country's bank account and of how we spend our money and where we get our money from. And so his thing was that he upped national insurance tax. Did it piss off loads of people? Absolutely. And it was something that she was critical of. So one area that she's talked about is cancelling the national insurance rise that Sunak announced in April, and cancelling the scheduled rise in corporation tax. She talks a lot about, let's let people do their thing, let's let businesses do their thing, and if we lay off them and don't charge them lots of money to exist, then they will flourish on their own. We don't hold anybody's hand. That's her thing. Is it wishful thinking? That's what lots of people are criticising her for. It's like, hang on. You're going to help us with the energy bills. You're going to help the NHS, but you're going to have less money in your pot to do it with. Where are you going to get the money to do it? Presumably she'll have a plan that she rolls out. But Rishi Sunak is quite critical of, you know, you can't promise the earth. You have, something's got to give. That's his kind of comment on her strategy. So that's where she is on tax. And then, like I say, on this energy thing, she has pledged that within a week of her being in office, she would have a policy in place to help people with their energy bills. She's spoken about suspending green levies on energy bills and also a potential freeze on, you know, those bills rising. There's question marks everywhere, but of course there always are. When new prime ministers step in, they can talk about their priorities, but we're obviously lacking in the detail, and we're going to have to see in the coming weeks how she's going to flesh these out. I would say the biggest bit of commentary around this amongst her, you know, non-supporters is, but how? How are you going to do this? Where's the money coming from? How are you going to lay off but also help us at the same time? Not saying it's not doable, just very interested as to how. And speaking of naysayers, let's talk about who is happy and who is not. Because really, you know, like I say, if she wants to get stuff done, she has to have support in Parliament. It's all well and good saying, look at all these lovely things I want to do. But then if she, with her cabinet, starts to, you know, jigsaw policies together, and then nobody in Parliament is going to back her, then they're not going to happen. So who's happy, who's not? Let's start with the naysayers. Labour being the presidents of the anti-Tory club. Who's surprised that they are not fans of Liz Truss, considering she's such a kind of quintessential conservative in her beliefs, at least at the moment. Labour MP Zara Sultana is quite a key demonstration of how Labour feels. She's put on Monday the 6th after Truss's win, quote, "Let's be in no doubt. 12 years of Tory class war is set to get even worse." not holding back there. Similarly, the leader of the Lib Dems, Ed Davey, he tweeted, quote, under Liz Truss, we're set to see more of the same crisis and chaos as under Boris Johnson. So that's what he tweeted this week. SNP leader Nicola Sturgeon, who I thought would be like really, what's the word? Shady, because they don't have a really nice relationship by the sounds of things. She was actually quite diplomatic. She congratulated Liz Truss on Twitter and said that she hopes they, quote, build a good working relationship. I think that's interesting because during Liz Truss's campaign, she said that Nicola Sturgeon was a, quote, attention seeker. Sorry. It's just funny because it's like Scotland wants independence. That's Nicola Sturgeon's raison d'etre, right? That's what she wants to happen. And so to sort of bat it all off as attention seeking, whose attention is she trying to get? She wants to get out. She wants no attention from Westminster. But, you know, what Liz Truss was trying to say is like they cause a stir which isn't needed. That is very much a heavy opinion amongst many Conservatives and Liz Truss's allies. By the way, that's actually quite a important clip to play you. Just if you are wondering, you know, we're talking about what are Liz Truss's priorities. If you're wondering about her approach towards the potential of Scottish independence, which is a real potential, there are a lot of people in Scotland who want independence. So this is what Liz Truss said when approached about that exact question at hustings in Exeter.
I feel like I'm a child of the Union, that I really believe we are a family and we're better together. And I think the best thing to do with Nicola Sturgeon is ignore her.
It's a bit difficult when she's First Minister, though. She's got a democratically elected position, yeah, just as you would.
I'm sorry, she's an attention seeker, Seb. That's what she is.
There you go. Best thing to do is to ignore her. But nice that Sturgeon's saying, let's build a good working relationship. Not sure if you can do that if you're being ignored. And then let's talk about her own party. You may or may not know, Liz Truss served under Boris Johnson's government, most recently as Foreign Secretary. She kind of managed to stay away from the scandal, mostly, during all of these mass resignations that Johnson faced and all the Partygate stuff, you know, where he was fined by the police for having parties and things like that. She kind of kept her head down and she wasn't so involved. So it is unsurprising that Johnson is an advocate of Truss because she was much more loyal, you know, it's absolutely true. She was much more loyal than Rishi Sunak was, who was one of the first to resign and to essentially start this domino effect of lots of other people resigning too. One of you asked me, hang on, let me just check. Miss Vix on Instagram asked me, can she give Boris Johnson a place in her cabinet? Well, Boris Johnson in his speech kind of implied that he's aiming to chill out for a bit. That was the impression I got, because in his words, he said he kind of compared himself to a rocket, you know, blasting off into oblivion and then inevitably, quote, splashing down invisibly in some remote and obscure corner of the Pacific. That, to me, doesn't scream central government cabinet position, but who knows? We'll see. Rishi Sunak, runner-up in the leadership contest, what has he had to say? He's been relatively quiet on his future plans. I know that The Guardian interpreted that he wouldn't take a cabinet post from Liz Truss. They put a piece out to say that, you know, he'd kind of indicated that he wouldn't, again, because of the fact that they clash on their economic stance. He described her as, quote, promising the earth to everybody. So The Guardian seems to think that we won't see him in a cabinet position. Again, never say never in politics. And quite often when politicians go head to head or toe to toe, however you want to put it, they keep each other close after that. Yeah, he has kind of done the whole, right, it was good to spar with you, but we are all one family. He said, quote, it's time for politics to be over, folks. So, again, diplomatic, but is it thinly veiling kind of disdain at who has taken over in lieu of him? Maybe. And then, of course, she is popular amongst the wider Conservative Party, but it doesn't feel like she's super popular amongst you know, some of the key players in Parliament. After she won on Monday the 5th, Priti Patel, who had been the Home Secretary, I'm sure you're well aware of that, she resigned. Then Nadine Dorris, who had been the Culture Secretary, mentioned her quite a lot on the podcast, she resigned. Cabinet Office Minister Nigel Adams and Tory Party co-chair Ben Elliott announced their resignations, which, fine, you know, maybe they're sort of saying, look, there's no point in me being on your cabinet because we clearly don't agree. But is it the best look if people are, like, running away as you enter the position? No, like, it doesn't set a really good tone. Truss is obviously now putting together her own cabinet, so a reshuffle was going to happen, but their swift departure was, I guess, telling. So with that, you know, will Liz Truss meet big resistance in comparison to Johnson in Parliament? I think, seeing as, like I ran through in the intro, seeing as her win was relatively small compared to his, and due to, you know, we've seen these resignations as well, it's probable. I think it's probable that she'll at least have somewhat of a harder time to get things through than he did. I'm not saying that, you know, she won't be able to get things through. I think she still will. The Conservatives still have a huge majority. But I think she'll just have a different time. As well, bear in mind, she won off the back of a leadership election amongst the Conservatives, not a general election. I know that's how Boris Johnson got in originally, but then within a few months, snap, he called an election. And then he got a huge swathe of public support. So he had that mandate. He had that legitimacy. At the moment, Truss is not working with that, with those numbers and with that public support. So I think that will show. And I think people in Parliament will feel that. And like, is it worth saying? I think it is, as a woman. She's a girl. And like, do women have a harder ride in politics? I think anyone who's going to tell me no doesn't get it. Remember what Theresa May was put through. Was it all down to gender? Of course, I'm not saying that. Could it have been a bit down to gender, a little bit? Did anyone else feel that a little bit? I felt it a little bit. I thought that sometimes, you know, if the exact words that she'd said were said by a man, would her fate have been slightly different? It's impossible to say. I sometimes think about it. I'm sure I'm going to get people being really aggressive to me now. You fucking feminist burning your bra. Well, yes, frankly, yes, I am. Thank you so much. Just want women to have the same amount of say. Let's see what kind of a ride Liz Truss has. It's impossible to base anything and say, yeah, that's down to gender, because I think she will have a tougher ride than Johnson anyway, regardless of gender. But I wonder if it's a component. Sorry, just had to say it. By the way, on this thing about elections, somebody messaged me on Instagram about this. Oh, it's Jess from work, my new work here in Bristol. She messaged saying, when is the next general election? The latest we can have one is January 2025. Like, by the, you know, we have to have them a set amount of time apart. The last one was in 2019, so the latest we can go is 2025. There's been hints from Liz Truss herself that she might look to call an election earlier. When she beat Rishi Sunak, she told other Conservative members that she will deliver, quote, a great victory for the Conservative Party in 2024. So if that doesn't imply it, then I don't know what does. So there you go, Jess. Hopefully that gives you an idea, but it's quite fluid and there is some leverage about when we could see one, latest 2025. Cabinet. Let's talk about the cabinet. This is annoying because I'm having to talk about this before we know 100%, and probably by the time you hear this episode, we'll know a lot more, so it'll be a bit outdated. But I can at least tell you what I know. Liz Truss is a big ally with Kwasi Kwarteng, and he has been confirmed as the new chancellor. So Rishi Sunak's old job, the man in charge of the money. He was previously business secretary, and this is somewhat of a graduation. He is now in charge of the economy. In terms of other people that are staying on that you might have heard of, Home Secretary, I feel like that's quite a big one, and you're going to be interested to know who's getting it. Suella Braverman. She was on the cabinet already, but now she's graduating to that, like, oh my God, big ticket item role. Obviously succeeding Priti Patel, who stood down as of Liz Truss winning. Other really big roles that we know about at this point, and I'm recording in the evening of Tuesday the 6th of September, Therese Coffey, another ally of Liz Truss. She is now Health Secretary, so that's that other big ticket item, along with being Deputy Prime Minister, Therese Coffey. So that is a name you're going to hear a lot. She was Work and Pensions Secretary. We will hear about more as we go. It's not a full picture yet. I will keep you updated, but that is another reason to follow the @BareNakedPolitics Instagram page, because we'll put up posts as we hear the news. Okay, hopefully that has pretty much formed a picture in your mind of what's happened and what we can expect and how it's all going to work. I know that there are some question marks, but that's because it's day one of Liz Truss's chapter as, you know, leader of the UK. So we don't know how things are going to pan out. We don't know 100% what her cabinet looks like at this point, and we don't know which of the policies she said she's going to prioritise she actually will be able to deliver on. I understand if you feel cynical, we're just going to have to see. Just to finish this episode then on some things that we do know, to add a bit of clarity, because I know we're all craving that, let me give you a bit of a profile of who Liz Truss is. Quite a few of you, I don't know whether you meant it sassily or whether you actually wanted me to answer it, but who is she? So I'm going to assume that you mean it genuinely, and I'm going to tell you. Liz Truss is an interesting character, right? She talks about how she grew up in a left-wing household and how her parents were kind of, like leftist campaigners, big time against nuclear weapons. Like they used to protest nuclear weapons and campaign for nuclear disarmament. Then she went to Oxford University and was a Liberal Democrat, an outspoken Liberal Democrat. And she would talk about, for example, the need to abolish the Queen, like the royal family. So a hell of a journey from there to now where she, you know, is shaking hands with the Queen and saying, please, can I form a government under your divine monarchy? So, you know, I'm not saying that you're not allowed to go on a bit of a journey, but it is quite interesting the sheer spectrum of political stances that Liz Truss has held. Within her political career, like we know, was a loyal supporter of Boris Johnson. She sat as his foreign secretary and stayed with him, you know, during the resignation scandal. She has held key cabinet positions under both Theresa May. She was justice secretary under Theresa May and David Cameron. She was environment secretary under David Cameron. That was her entrance into cabinet life. So again, three very different prime ministers, Johnson, May and Cameron. They're all the same party, but they're not that similar. And Theresa May and Boris Johnson regularly butted heads. So it's interesting that she has forged a workable career under all three. I'm not saying that it was all the same, and I'm not saying she agreed with everything. But if you're in the cabinet, the whole point is that you are united and you're meant to resign if you don't support what's happening. You're like a collective. What's it called? Collective responsibility. That's it. So in theory, she did support what May and Cameron did, and Johnson. And then this theme of like changing your political stance continues with Brexit. During the Brexit campaigning period, ugh, how awful was that? Although I would genuinely go back to it at this point. She was a Remainer. She wanted the UK to remain part of the European Union. And she quite vocally would campaign and speak about it. And then after the Brexit referendum result was declared, she went on a journey to becoming a supporter, saying it was actually an opportunity for the UK. And then as Foreign Secretary, she went about being quite stern in her relations with the EU. So in some ways, and I know that the critics have been really big on this, it's quite hard to pinpoint, like, who is Liz Truss? What do you really stand for? But in many ways, we've all changed our mind on things, especially the closer you get to the source of information, the more you're going to know, and therefore the more you can, you know, hone in on your own judgment. So I think her supporters would say, hang on, she was allowed to experiment with different skins as she grew up, but now she's decided. And I guess another question that's worth pondering, and I encourage you to kind of do this over the next few months, is to think, what image does she want to portray? Who is she trying to be? Because that is a big part of a politician's profile, is like, this is who I want you to think I am. This is what I'm prioritising. Is it a sense of humour? Is it I'm a caretaker? Is it I'm a strong, steely, you know, aloof leader? What vibe are you giving us? We've all seen lots of kind of Margaret Thatcher comparisons, especially in these photographs, like the one with the big black fluffy hat on her visit to Russia, or the one of her riding that tank again. Huge source of ridicule amongst her critics. And, you know, when it comes to photo ops, you know that politicians are always going to jump on an opportunity, but she does seem to be pinned as the lover of the photo op. But when she is addressed about those comparisons, like, oh, are you the new Margaret Thatcher? She kind of, at least it makes out like she finds that quite frustrating. In fact, here's a quote. It is quite frustrating that female politicians always get compared to Margaret Thatcher. She's not wrong about that. And it isn't fair, like, if there's a, you know, if you're only, there's only one or two people to go off, for God's sake. So, like, let's not just compare me to her. Boris Johnson didn't have to necessarily suffer that. Although people did say that he would pin himself a lot on Winston Churchill. I don't know how successful that was. And I don't know how true it was. I don't know whether that was his intent. But I know that Boris Johnson is very interested in Winston Churchill. So actually, I'm wrong. People did make those comparisons, but I think it is more prevalent when females are concerned. I reckon I agree with her on that, but are there overlaps between her policies and Margaret Thatcher's? I would say there are, yeah. I'd love to know what you think. You can get in touch. Instagram's at barenakedpolitics, and you can message me your thoughts. Are you relieved that the leadership contest is over and now we have some fresh blood in to make some waves? Do you trust her with... you know, these massive challenges. We've barely even talked about the international challenges she faces. You know, the biggest war that Europe has faced in almost a century is on the doorstep, Ukraine and Russia. With Russia invading Ukraine, it has posed all sorts of threats, not just in terms of physical security, but also in terms of cyber security. And then, of course, like energy prices, supply chain issues, food prices, it's all being affected by this war. How is she going to approach that? I'd love to know what you think and whether you're confident in that. Would you rather it have been Rishi Sunak? Are you a bit indifferent? I'd love to know all of it. You can keep in touch and you can also let us know what you want to listen to next. Thank you to Maddie for all your help in producing this episode. You are excellent and I'm extremely lucky to have you. Hannah, thank you so much for all your input this week. I think, Hannah, you'll be producing the next one. Looking forward to it. I fucking love having you guys on with me. And yeah, I got you. I hope that was helpful and I'll speak to you in the next one. Goodbye.